Hi everyone, and welcome to SciDance Podcast Season 3. I'm your host, Jasmine Cook. This is a dance science podcast presenting discussions with global industry leaders, aiming to make research and information more accessible and enhance dancer well-being, health and training at all levels of the sector. New episodes every Monday, 6 a.m. London time. Thank you so much to The Place for sponsoring today's episode. Located in the heart of London, The Place is a creative powerhouse for dance development that is leading the way in dance training, creation and performance. One of Europe's most exciting, innovative dance spaces, where artists from all over the world come to push creative boundaries, to experiment, and to perform outstanding new work. The Place is home to London Contemporary Dance School, a 288-seat theatre, an extensive range of classes, courses, and participatory opportunities for adults and young people, and professional development programmes for artists. Check them out at The Place London on Instagram, and they'll also be linked in the show notes. Hi, and welcome back to SciDance Podcast. So I'm here today with Nikki and Steph, who you'll be able to see, hopefully, if this makes it onto YouTube or onto the socials. Nikki is a medical doctor with clinical and research experience involving high-performance dancers and athletes spanning 30 years, which includes international attachments in Australia and Switzerland and ongoing international collaborations. And she's also a lifelong dancer herself, still taking at least 4 classes per week. Both Steph and Nikki are qualified medical doctors. Steph now specialises in the treatment of low energy availability and relative energy deficiency in sport, and is also an active researcher alongside her clinical work. And you might know her from her educational hub, Oz Dancers Overseas, which I'll link below, but you can find on Instagram. I don't know if either of you have anything to add. You can also listen to Steph and Nikki in season 2, which gives the basics of this episode that we're going to, this is kind of a part 2 to it. But I don't know if you have anything to add on your bios, either of you.
I think that's about it. We're doctors and we're passionate about dancing ourselves and we're here to try and make sure every dancer reaches their full potential, healthy full potential, whatever their ambitions are. I think that's pretty much it, isn't it, Steph?
Absolutely. I think the only thing we would need to add, just for clarification, I'm a registered sports nutritionist as well, because there's so much, you know, buzz around, like, are you even qualified? So Yes, I am. I read just yesterday, just to throw this in, there has been a study in the UK that actually 90% of health advice given on accounts of influencers is incorrect. So just thought that would be important.
Yeah, to make sure you're getting information from really good sources, reliable sources, so that you don't fall and stumble and fall into those pitfalls which are waiting there. So,
and get sick instead of getting healthy.
Well, yeah. Quite.
Absolutely. So I'll link that one below, because that's definitely a good place for dancers to go and get qualified advice. But yeah, so like I mentioned, you can go back to season 2 and listen to Steph and Nikki's episode there. But today we're focusing on case studies, because we felt like this would give a really good sort of practical insight into what these cases often present as and the implications of them. So looking first a little bit in ballet, we know that ballet tends to favour a pre-pubescent body and late maturation. So I think you might have a case study for that one. Could you give us a bit of an overview about that as a field and then go into a more specific case?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is a patient, actually, Nikki and I have been seeing both over the past couple of years. And I think there is an obsession in ballet with a prepubescent body, which we also know from studies coming from psychology. Late maturation is favoured, and very often incomplete maturation is actually favoured. And this is definitely a case of incomplete maturation. So it was a dancer. She was, quite talented, and was always considered to be like a good to excellent dancer. And as she was showing some signs of maturation, it was like nobody was really so worried about her. At some point, her weight was very low, and the school where she trained then was kind of paying a bit of attention that she was actually getting a bit more energy, but nobody really looked into this. Is she actually now getting enough injury? Is she getting enough energy in order to cover for all her training and all the processes in the body, the household processes, or like heartbeat and breathing and metabolism and, you know, building hormones and everything. And also is covered for growth. So kind of growth, wasn't really considered, and she was getting injured now and then. And at some point, I think, Nikki, it must have been in her early 20s, she came to see you. And it was quite clear she was already having a negatively impacted bone health. She wasn't feeling well overall, so mentally. But kind of in the dance world, she was still considered, or in the ballet world, she was still considered a successful dancer. She kind of, she had made her way. She had gotten a job, which was part freelancer and part with the company. And she just wasn't feeling great. And I think, Nikki, that's when you then first came in. So last sentence from me is nobody ever really noticed that there was something going on. And she was made feeling okay for being the way, you know, for her physique and the way she was dancing. So everyone considered this to be like as good as she could be. But in medical terms, so mental health and physical health, she was far from okay.
I think that's such a good way of putting it, Steph, because to external view, she looked fine. You know, if you just looked at her, she was very tall and willowy, but she had some development. So she had gone through a bit of puberty, you know? She had some breast development and she looked like a woman, albeit a very slim and well, dare I say, thin woman. The final step of maturation for a woman is this onset of periods. So you grow, you have some physical development, so you look more like a woman in terms of your breasts, etc. But the final bit, the sort of the full stop in the sentence that you finished your maturation, is the onset of periods. And like we discussed last time, if your periods haven't started by your 16th birthday, we give that a medical term, primary amenorrhea. So that means amenorrhea means no periods, and primary means, well, they just haven't started. So this was the thing with this dancer. As Steph says, she was getting on pretty well, and she looked tall and willowy and everything. And so everyone thought it was fine. And actually, but when you ask her, when she's like 20 or whatever, and it's like, my periods haven't started, that is a big warning sign that the body inside internally is definitely not happy. Yet, like Steph was saying, in the dance world, often that is encouraged, looking slightly young. But actually, if we think about it realistically, there are no principal dancers that are 12-year-olds for a reason, because physically they are not strong enough. And also mentally, they're not mature enough, because these hormones we're talking about in women and associated the estrogen, et cetera, of course, for bones, but also actually for maturation of the brain. That's what makes the difference between men and women, by the way. In puberty, it's the testosterone or the estrogen, depending, you know, that's what makes us different. And that is included in the brain development. So although the irony of this whole situation is, although in the dance world, there is this culture maybe that, oh, to look like you're very young, you know, is a good thing. Actually, it's not, because you're not going to reach your full potential like you say, Steph. You're just not able to cope with that. You wouldn't be able to. So it's just limiting, literally stunting your development in all senses, in terms of maturation, medical maturation, and also in terms of your growth and reaching your full potential as a dancer. So I think that's really what this, what we're describing in this particular dancer, Steph, yeah?
Yeah, and I just wanted to say, I mean, we were just discussing how she actually got to recover and be healthy again. But just to add to this, if you ask her now, a couple of years later, how she was feeling back then, she would always say she was feeling horrible because she was feeling incomplete. So it is not just, I think it's important also to emphasize, it's not only us saying she wasn't healthy. It was like, looking back now, being healthy, she would tell it, you know, anyone and everyone, I wasn't feeling healthy. I wasn't feeling complete.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good point. But you don't realize that often until you reach that point. But listen, the thing is, we have to acknowledge that puberty for anybody, dancer or not, it is a challenging time, isn't it? Because you're a child, and then you go through, and now you're an adult. That's actually pretty scary, isn't it? Right? And everyone will remember back when this happened to them. It's like, actually, that was quite, a challenge. Your body's changing. It is a confusing time. But put on top of that, the pressure of being a dancer and all, I think I'm meant to stay looking childlike. So there's two elements to it. It's a natural thing. So we have to accept that, that's part of life. It is a challenging time. Just as the other end of the extreme of life, menopause is also a challenging time. They're just different stages in your life. So that's number one. You have to that's the way of it. But also as a dancer, you have to remember this is actually a necessary process to go through in order to become a long-term successful dancer. You might have short-term gains and be called up for some performances, but actually, as we're going to discuss in other case studies, in the long term, it's not going to work out.
Absolutely. And then she came to see you because she was getting worried about not having had her period, but it was at the same time where it was already becoming clear that she was affected by osteopenia, which we have discussed in season two as well. But this is like a preliminary stage, and then you progress to osteoporosis afterwards. So it's not like healthy bone and then it's osteoporosis, or what comes in between is osteopenia. And I think that was the moment when she came and saw you for the first time, right?
So having those facts, also it's like, well, you can't deny the facts of a DEXA, a bone scan, to show that your bone health is, even though you're 20, it's not a great deal better than mine. And I'm a lot older than that, shall we say. So, that's a wake up call, isn't it, for a dancer? I mean, your bones, you need, obviously, clearly you need strong bones. And it's horrible when dancers get stress fractures and it's a serious injury. So I think, sometimes it does take that wake up call. Fortunately, this particular dancer hadn't actually had a stress fracture yet. But these are all the motivations why she, with Steph's guidance, was able to turn things round and really, get to grips with what was going on. And the brilliant news is, Steph, I'll leave that to you.
Yeah, she's recovered. So we can definitely say she's recovered right now. We do have, it's a bit courtesy of COVID, to be honest, because COVID actually did slow her down to a degree that her body was finally able to catch up with everything. But I have to say she had made huge progress already prior to that. So COVID kind of was just the last bit in this recovery. And I so admire that she then just said, okay, now I'll go for both, like COVID recovery and amenorrhea recovery. And she did make it, and she's now back and back dancing, back teaching. And
her period. Yeah. And she's now got periods, even at the, a later age. Listen.
Yeah.
It would have been better if they'd been earlier, but listen, we're not complaining. So that is really, now she has completed and she feels complete, literally. Yes, and her body, that is the sign, like you say, Steph, it's the monthly free medical health check for women. If you have a regular period, you can be pretty reassured that everything is right, going is correct inside. And that is pretty, that is fantastic. And she's obviously delighted about that. Now she feels she is complete, literally. And as you say, now she's got these female hormones, and lo and behold, she feels better and mentally, physically, everything. So it's all fallen into place. But that's not to underestimate that was a journey, a tough journey for her, wasn't it, Steph? And she had to combat various, I'm going to say prejudices, I'm going to use that word, along the way. That, oh, actually, you look great, you look skinny, you look underdeveloped, or literally in maturation wise. So she had to overcome all of that, those uninformed and incorrect influences around her. It's absolutely an amazing story. And I hope this gives, for anybody listening who is in this situation, whose periods haven't stopped and they're over 16, it's never too late. Right. So, you can turn this around and you will feel a lot better if you do.
Absolutely. And you will dance better. She will absolutely dance better. She's getting through her training in a way that is just so different to how it was before. She did have to fight also this prejudice, again, being told by uninformed others. of, oh my gosh, you look so like big. You look so big, you know, recovering your periods will make you look so big. And actually, yes, she did gain, let's say, significant amount of weight, more than she ever thought was possible. And she says she's still fitting in the same clothes because, you know, she is leaner than ever, but in a sense of really lean muscle mass and not messed up body composition, as we discussed it in season two of your podcast. So yeah, it's again a sign that if you're working for your body, or, you know, if you are your body's ally, you will actually see results you never thought were possible in the first place, you know.
And also now that mental strength, now she will hear those unhelpful, uninformed comments, because now she's mentally stronger. She has mental resilience. She's been through this process. She's got hormones working in her brain. And so now she knows that actually these comments are incorrect, unhelpful, and, you know, she can block her ears out to them. But whereas before, she would have taken that because her brain wasn't fully matured and she was in this anxious state. But now that is the other thing about hormones, that it's also for your mental health, your mental resilience, so that now you can rebuff those comments. I mean, it's still not great. Obviously wish those comments would stop, but nevertheless, if you're listening to this and you've had those comments, oh, this costume won't fit you and et cetera, et cetera, please, be strong. You know your own body. So I think that's the key message for that particular dancer. And Steph and I are so delighted for her. You know, it's always going to be a continuous thing, you know, and we're always there, aren't we, Steph? If some people, you know, if something happens, there might be sometimes when you are at a low for whatever reason, and one of those comments might affect you. And so that's the time when, you know, to keep strong, basically.
Absolutely. And I mean, she's going back into an environment where there are constant triggers. We all know that.
Exactly.
All of those we introduced today live in this environment, in this sort of environment. But yeah, absolutely. Really amazing case. And yeah, kind of, I think we're just so happy for her, right?
Exactly.
Can I just ask? So you've done a lot on what it causes in the body, and Nikki, you just touched on it there about what it causes in the mind. Could you give a bit more? So you gave quite a lot about her recovery mentally, but what did she struggle with mentally before her recovery? Like what?
Well, I mean, I'll just say one thing, and Steph, because she, you know, helped her, especially, you know, break through that barrier. So I think it goes back to what I said, that hormones, the sex steroid hormone, so in women we're talking mainly about estrogen and progesterone, and men of course the testosterone, which start to increase with puberty, you know, of course they're for bone health and physical health, cardiovascular health, soft tissue strength, etc. But actually lots of people don't realize they're really, really super important for the brain. They're part of the neurotransmitters, how our brain works and how it's wired, basically, and our mood, right? So if you don't have these hormones on your side working for you, it's going to make you very vulnerable. It's going to make you sad. And also it's going to be difficult for you to make really good decisions. So for example, when you do have these unhelpful, ill-informed comments, your brain isn't wired literally to cope with them. And so you kind of believe them, if I can put it that way. So that's why it's so important for mental health. Steph, I'm sure you want to add some more on that.
I mean, you pretty much said it. So there's the cognitive part, the decision-making part, and definitely being in this low energy availability, also parts of her brain, especially the prefrontal cortex, the amygdala and the hippocampus, which have most receptors or stress receptors in the brain. They were kind of constantly, these receptors were constantly blocked, which also impairs like rational decision-making. Definitely she was feeling quite low, but I think her biggest problem was really feeling incomplete. Like, I don't deserve all of this because I haven't, you know, my maturation isn't as far as it should be. So I'm not deserving what people like, a special role or a special job, or, you know, it was it was always that she was not feeling complete. And I think actually, looking back at this, so in hindsight, it is such a beautiful way of saying it, because it is a bit of an umbrella term, feeling incomplete. But then again, it also shows how much it impacts other people, you know, or those suffering from low energy availability, amenorrhea of any sort of kind, any kind. So yeah, she was really struggling with anything she does is actually, even if people say it's not good enough, it is not good enough because she's not far enough in her maturation.
So it's sort of self-esteem, isn't it? That yeah. Your self-esteem, and you think that you're only going to be valued because you're thin,
yeah,
effectively, or you know, but actually,
and then you are thin, and then you think you don't deserve what you just achieved.
Yeah, so it's a vicious circle. It's a vicious circle. But if you can break that, because your hormones are there, and you feel more confident, you can think rationally, all those things like that we've described, then you know it all falls into place. The body is an amazing thing, by the way. The body. Millions of however many millions of years I can't, you know, of evolution, the body is absolutely incredible, and it runs fantastically if you give it a chance to. But if you intentionally, well, I'm going to say self-sabotage, but that's meant in the nicest term. It's obviously sometimes the subconscious, as we're going to go on to discuss, you know, you're not intentionally, of course, no one's intentionally going out to make themselves ill, but it just through various circumstances, external, etc., it happens that way. And so the poor body is really struggling. And so if you can put all the behaviors in balance, then lo and behold, the body actually will work for you. That's what it's programmed to do. That's what it desperately wants to do. But you just need to give it the thing, you know, some minimum things so it can do that for you.
Absolutely. I think that's such a good moment to just maybe go on, if Jesse doesn't want to ask something, to go on to how does it happen actually, totally, yeah, not being aware of, you know, the energy intake is just not sufficient. So because these cases happen as well, and it happens more often than we possibly believe they do, you know.
Yeah, I was about to say, maybe we should move on to a secondary one. But I was just going to say that link between the body and the mind, I think, is something people don't always actually realize, that there is that direct link with the hormones. That's so important to point out. So thank you. But yeah, on to your next case study, if you're ready.
Yeah, so secondary amenorrhea, big difference or main difference is your periods started at some point, preferably. When they should have started the latest at age 16. So they did start, and then at some point in your career, you lose them again. This could be very soon after your first one, or this could be years later. And I see that actually happen very often when dancers progress from, well, after their graduation, and then they progress into either apprenticeship or trainee programs, or also into a corps de ballet contract. And then you're suddenly in a new environment, and you, of course, you know, everything's new, and you kind of want to fit in, and you're trying to adapt to this new culture. And then maybe you end up in an environment where the culture is like 20 minutes, 30 minutes lunch break only, and everyone's having a smoothie. And I'm not talking about the big smoothie with oats and, you know, loads of I'm talking about like some fruits and being made a smoothie. So maybe that's normal then, and you kind of adapt to it. And of course, exercise does suppress appetite, so you're not even feeling it really. And then a year into your apprenticeship, period is gone. You've lost, in this particular case, the dancer had lost 4 kilos. She was still dancing okay. She wasn't injured at this point, but her period was gone, and it was not making her feel great. And she was kind of aware of that. That's not really good. And then she reached out and tried very carefully, with very minimal adaptations to her training, to recover. And again, courtesy of COVID and lockdown, so she wasn't actually infected, but lockdown made her slow down, which was great. But again, she didn't completely stop training. She did some sort of exercise. It was a lot of yoga and then some higher intensity training included. And she was working on the timing of the food. She was working on trying to increase the portion sizes, And she wasn't really having a restrictive mindset. Of course, she was somehow influenced by comments about having a thinner body. And she knows that in the company she dances with, like, thinner bodies usually are cast for more significant roles. But it wasn't really hard working with her, because she was just like, oh, that's what I need to do. You know, like, kind of every session was like, oh, that's what I need to do. Okay. So, and then, you know, next session you would get the feedback of, I managed this, I managed to implement that. And nevertheless, it took her almost a year to recover her periods. This is so hard. This is the moment I find, Nikki, right, huh? This is so hard for us, because we can never predict how long it will take for the body to recover. Mm-hmm. And even with a non-restrictive mindset, it may take a year. At the end of the day, yeah, as I said, thanks to lockdowns, she could recover two cycles, then went back into training and into rehearsals, lost the third one. And that was her final wake-up call, where she said, like, no, I'm not going to let this happen again. And then summer break came and she could work on it. And now she's fully recovered as well. And this is one of these very, I'd say, typical cases where it's really unintentional, where there's no... let's say mental predisposition to it, in the sense of disordered eating thoughts or patterns, but it still does take time. I think that's really important to say.
Yeah, so this is just to sum up what Steph just said, so this is a female dancer with secondary amenorrhea, so periods did start, but then they stopped. But like Steph, just to emphasize what Steph says, this was unintentional. It was just because of dancers are busy. You have a big training schedule, we know. And unfortunately, very short lunch breaks. And because it was, you needed something quick to grab, that's why she just went with the crowd and got a non-energy dense smoothie. So it was just a case of, balancing the energy intake and the training demand. Sometimes it takes, you need to tweak both. So we're not talking, just to emphasize what Steph said, often we have dancers and athletes come to us and they're really scared. They say, my periods have stopped, but I'm really scared. Or they've just plucked up the courage to come and see us because they think we're going to say, you've got to stop dancing entirely. Just to emphasize, that's not very rarely. I mean, it will. Well, I'm not going to say never, right, Steph? There will be some dancers who have got an eating disorder and they're very underweight and they're actually very ill. And frankly, they shouldn't exercise and they need to be in hospital. But quite a lot of the dancers, like this dancer, actually, it's just they've got the balance a little bit wrong. So it will be a case of, don't do the extra stuff. You know, you're already doing, got a packed schedule, so don't do extra training. And, you know, maybe in a rehearsal where appropriate, you know, it is a rehearsal to practice the placement, the timing of the music, not necessarily to test, can you do the steps full out? We know you can do the steps full out. So it's just a case of being mindful of your energy expenditure and also being practical. If you have only a half an hour lunch break half an hour lunch break, 20 minutes or short lunch break, guess what? You've got to go for something that is quick and easy, but it's got to be really energy dense packed. And this is where, you know, you just have to sort of plan ahead. But dancers are excellent planners. You wouldn't turn up to a rehearsal or a class, would you, with the wrong shoes, with the wrong costume, at the wrong time? Oh, you wouldn't do that as a dancer. That's just not, you know. So all you have to do, it's the same thing. You just have to add on that list of be prepared, of make sure you have planned or you have in mind or you're prepared or whatever it is, something that's going to be quick, easy, and give you the energy you need. So I think that sort of sums up this particular dancer, I think, Steph.
Yeah, and I think in this case we should add, I think she had this idea because she had seen this on the socials, of course, that, you know, everyone who wants to recover their periods need to, like, morph into a couch potato. That, because that's when you look at those accounts, that's actually really what they say. You've got to go all in and otherwise you will never recover. And honestly, actually, I've had even primary healthcare professionals, like, you know, primary GPs and so say that, and just, you know, before patients have even spoken to me, they were already given HRT, so hormone replacement therapy, because the GP, or in this case, I think it was an orthopedic surgeon, they would say, like, oh, with your job, you'll never recover your period. You know, like, yeah, those hormones. Yeah, I know, I see you, Nikki. It is so bizarre. Messages that dancers are being told, they are so bizarre. And actually, we have some really good open access medical evidence now. So I sent this link to you, Jesse, that you can link it in the show notes and everyone can read it. We have now randomized controlled trials, which is pretty much very high quality in medical trials. And we know now that over the course of around, I think the most valuable data was between 3 and 6 months, but it was, they looked at them over 12 months, so over a year. And if female, it was athletes in this case, but if female athletes kept exercising but increased their energy intake to a degree that we, I think, totally agree with, Nikki, and which we see very often in practices, is very practical. They can keep exercising and still regain their periods or restore a more regular menstrual cycle. So, that's actually possible.
Yeah, so I think, Steph, it goes back to what we said earlier on, that having periods is normal physiology, which has been established over millions and millions of years of evolution. Yeah. So if someone says to you, being a dancer is not compatible with having periods, that's total, I'm sorry, I have to be absolutely blunt, that's incorrect information. However, you know what I mean? It's the same for an athlete. So if you get told that, please just, you know, bear that in mind. It's normal physiology, regardless of how much exercise you're doing. If your periods stop, then obviously you haven't got the balance right. Simple as that, right? Okay. And the other thing is, sometimes it's kind of easier. I'll just give a sticking plaster. I mean, thank goodness HRT, we've had this discussion before, never the contraceptive pill. HRT, true, it is an option if the bones are really bad. But even if you give HRT because of you're concerned about bone health as a doctor, that is not a get out of jail card. That still means one has to address those issues of getting the right balance of training and nutrition. So if you are offered HRT, good, and it's not the pill, hurrah. But also just be aware that that should be in combination with advice about to restore your own periods in the long term. The HRT is just a short-term measure just because you're worried about your bone health. So I think those are the main points in this for this dancer. But also it's a better thing because then you feel in control. You know, that's all about, you are in control of this, right? It's your body. So it's much better to figure it out and work it out what works for you, rather than having to rely on you know, or be told that this is normal, that your body isn't working correctly. It's like, that's strange. Anyway, so I think that sums up that one, right?
That's really interesting. I think it's interesting as well to consider how it can be voluntary or involuntary, which isn't something I've really thought about before. So I think you might have a case of someone who, so it was the one we just did, voluntary, and then this one would be involuntary. Oh no, other way around.
Other way around, right? Yeah, exactly.
The first one in involuntary, and this one will be voluntary. So, could you give us a bit of an overview of that one?
Yeah. So, when we talk about voluntary low energy availability, we don't talk about voluntary secondary amenorrhea, but we talk about like voluntary low energy availability. So, this comes along with the idea, so kind of a mindset, a more restrictive mindset of my body's not right for dance. I need to lose some weight very often, or I would say probably 100% in their biography, you will find that they have been told to lose weight, or the you know, thunder thighs is a very common term that kind of triggers unhelpful thoughts about food and the body. So it is definitely something to do a lot with body image, but again, also self-worth and self-esteem. And this is, the cause is mentally. So it is not really about the food. It is about this, I'm not right. Be that me as a person, as a character, I'm not right, or my body is not right. And so we talked about the spectrum of healthy eating, disordered eating, eating disorder. So kind of you can glide on the spectrum over the course of a year or two or three. But every now and then, just dancers get stuck in an eating disorder. So this idea of, okay, I can't control my teacher saying I have thunder thighs, but I control how much I eat. And then maybe I control that she's not going to say that again. This sort of idea, which is why we all need to be so careful about what we say, and how we say it, and why we also advocate so much for not to comment on someone's body because you never know what's going on in them, particularly not when they are younger and have zero coping skills.
Steph, can I just quickly say one other thing? It's definitely the expression, you know, talking, but it can actually be nonverbal things.
Right.
So if you're in the class and you know, you feel you're not getting corrections or you're not getting it, you know, corrections or you're not getting chosen for parts, yet the person standing next to you at the bar is getting the corrections and the parts, and she is a lot thinner than you, that can be a nonverbal thing that the person right. could interpret, which actually, it on the one hand, it could actually be correct that that is a bias and that isn't great, but actually it could also be your interpretation of it. Because if you are very sensitive to feel your self-esteem is a competitive world. We have to accept that dance, right? And you want to figure out how you can, you know, make it. You might have it in your mind that, oh, maybe it's because of that. And, you know, because I'm not worthy of that. So there are so many, it could be a misinterpretation, or it could be actually a genuine bad comment, whether that's verbal or non-verbal. So right. it's, I think I just wanted to add that.
No, totally fine. And I also, I think I should also say, it is not that it's always, you know, ballet alone or these comments made in the ballet world are not the single cause. Sometimes they are, but very often it is really about what's going on at home, how did they grow up, problems at home, problems at school, and not talking about ballet school here. So there's heaps of reasons how this can develop. Mm-hmm. But all of this in common is that food is just tool to try and grasp some fake control, because there's no control in this, but some fake control of life. And so any sort of eating disorder in this case that we're discussing now, it was actually anorexia nervosa. So this means the dancer tried over the course of a couple of years, she tried to reduce her food intake more and more and more and more, and would increase her exercise even more. So in order to just, you know, increase her energy expenditure per day and make this gap between energy intake and energy expenditure even bigger. And in this case, the focus is, of course, on trying to establish a healthy relationship with food, but far more mentally challenging because most of the time, I actually refuse the treatment if not a psychologist is involved as well, because that is just not psychology, not my profession. As it is a mental disorder, we just need them on board as well. And this idea of, I just saw this perpetuated on the socials probably last week. Like if she had an eating disorder, she'd never be able to dance like this. This is just, it is just so ignorant. It's just, I don't even know how to say it. It's so ignorant because, as Nikki said, the body is so smart and it would do anything to make you survive, anything. And let's say our genetic heritage is actually that we can move. There are other, you know, and I know you love to say that, Nikki, our body still thinks when we, you know, drag it to dance training, it still thinks, oh, that's stress, like running away from a saber-toothed tiger.
Exactly. And prioritize, it will prioritize that, yeah.
Absolutely, it will forever prioritize this movement, whatever movement you're doing to it. And you can't talk it out of, oh, it's just a dance class. You know, it's not going to understand it. And so it will let you move, but it will shut down more and more processes in your body. And so it is ridiculous to say that. It is ignorant to say that. In these cases, definitely, yes, the healthy relationship with food is very important, but just as important, if not even more, is actually the mental work. Very different.
Yes, Steph. And so just to pick up on that point, it's actually unpacking because it's not about the food per se, it's about some like fake control. That I thought that was a very good expression, fake control, because you're not really in control, it's your brain is making not. Refuse anyway, but anyway, it makes you feel better, or it numbs that, or whatever it is, the expressions you want to use. So I think that Steph and I, we see this a lot. You know, it's trying to unpack that or find out what it is, or just, it might be a combination of factors, by the way. Whatever that is, mm-hmm. that needs to be dealt with then, because otherwise what's going to happen if, you know, the standard way of treating an eating disorder is just get the person to eat, get them to put on weight, and then it's like, oh, you're cured. See ya. That's it. And guess what? Because you've still got something going on here that started it off in the first place, it's not the long-term solution. So you're absolutely right, Steph. I just wanted to emphasize that point, that trying to explore what's going on and trying to address that will mean that, you know, you're better able to, better equipped to deal with that in the future. Because let's be honest, life is like this. It might be a dance teacher giving you this comment, or it might be in future life, it might be, you know, breaking up with a boyfriend. There's life has stuff goes on. So if you haven't been able to recognize that and deal with stressful situations, whatever, then actually it's just going to be a recurring theme. So I think that in this situation, it's not so much recovery, but it's actually just sort of coping, dealing with it. How can I say it? Understanding yourself and having in place strategies, and, you know, to stop you going down that way. That's why the cycle, that's, isn't it, why the psychological side is important, Steph, right?
Absolutely. And I think she's really a brilliant example for that, because during lockdown, she actually managed to gain back one period. Mm-hmm. And the moment, and I so appreciate that she was so open about it. The moment it was there, she was like, but now I want to restrict again, because now I got it. So I want to restrict again, which is such a clear sign that we are not there yet. We are somewhere in recovery, but we are definitely not yet in the final stages of recovery. I think this really illustrates very well how challenging this process is to help her recover, in contrast to the one we were just discussing 5 minutes ago.
But to be positive, if anyone's listening to this and you have had an eating disorder, or you've still got an eating disorder, it doesn't mean that you're a write-off, you know. It will be tough. We have to say that, right? We're going to be realistic, but you know, trying to deal with it sooner rather than later is better, because then you're going to have a happier life, basically. And there will always be challenges coming up in life, and unless you're ready and you've got the strategies and recognize it as a trigger, then you know it's going to be a recurring theme, as in this dancer. So we're trying to give an overall positive message, but we're just trying to explain why it is challenge. It's not easy, but hey, life isn't easy, right? So
right. And I think that's a good moment to throw in a message for teachers as well, because her teachers did know about her trying to recover, and they did push her like crazy. So that definitely wasn't helpful at all. So if you're aware of this, then please try and not push them, because over-exercising is one part of why recovery is not happening the way it actually could. And they don't need to be in the studio the night before they have an exam. So that's definitely one point of it. And another one is the environment she is in. She is still a student. That is a very triggering one, where there are assessments of calorie intake over, I think it was 2 weeks, 10 days or 2 weeks. And then a discussion of what did I eat that actually was having empty calories. There is no such thing as empty calories. So trying to really, this curriculum was trying to eliminate any fun or emotional pleasure you could have while eating foods, which is a big part of recovery, that it's not always, you know, about the energy you are eating, but also eating is part of our social life, part of our emotional life, you know. So hugely triggering environment, which is not making it easier. She's a tough cookie though, so absolutely she will in the end, she will manage. She has come so far already. But again, just to say, it is secondary amenorrhea we are talking about. but there's no one size fits all when it comes to recovery. You've got to look at the individual.
And I think what you said about the teachers, by the way, when, you know, we know that there are some excellent teachers out there, but equally, and also some teachers who might not be aware, for example. And certainly I know, I'm sure Steph's the same, when I'm working with a dancer or an athlete, with the permission of the dancer or the athlete, I say, can I have a word? Can we have a three-way discussion with your coach or teacher, whatever? Because otherwise, if we give them advice, it's like, okay, you know, you need to tone down the training a little bit. You need to more consistent fueling or whatever. But then the teacher or the coach isn't aware of that and just gives them a really hard schedule. That's difficult. But if, and all the, I have to say today, all the coaches, certainly, maybe some teachers, it's a little bit, we're still working on that. You know, they understand. It's like, this is a team. So please don't give them this massive schedule if we're trying to sort this stuff out, because otherwise then there's extra pressure on the dancer. Oh my God, I've been told I've got to go into the studio the evening before the exam. And yet I know that actually that's not really what is going to be helpful. So I think that's the other thing, you know, for teachers listening to this, you know, we're all on the same, we're on the same team, by the way. So, you know,
right.
Always happy to discuss that. And then the final point you made, Steph, there, you know, food, yes, it is fuel, but actually we forget it's actually taste and enjoyment and social, especially the taste. I was telling you, Steph, yesterday I was listening to a very good program with a chef that travels with the cycling team, and he said it's food first and it's taste first, because cyclists have to eat a lot of food, right, as dancers should, by the way, because they're exercising all day anyway. And so he went to a lot of effort to make it appealing and make it, like you said, personalized. You know, not everyone likes, I don't know, a particular thing, but if there's an alternative to that that they like, then that's much better, rather than if it's feeling like an obligation, I've got to eat this thing. But actually, if you could eat something that you prefer, which is equivalent, then that's great.
Another reason why meal plans are not working. Sorry.
Voila.
If anyone ever writes me an email like, do you write meal plans for dancers? This is like,
no,
I write them together with you so that
you enjoy.
And so that I know that you know why you are eating what and when. But
you like what's on the suggested
exactly
list.
Exactly. But me writing for you and then, you know, like you just take it and that's your blueprint for the week, that's not happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And I think hopefully this podcast and your page especially, Steph, is useful for teachers to kind of get a background information about what they would need to know for dancers. Have you got, just as our last one, if you've got 10 more minutes, have you got a male patient as well that could be an example?
Nikki, do you want to go first?
I do the young one.
Yours is a younger one, yeah.
I've got a younger male dancer, and then Steph's got an older male dancer, which sort of shows the continuum. So a couple of years ago, I worked with a young dancer still in training at a vocational school. Pretty young, 14, 15. Anyway, and he got it into his head that looking at all in the mirrors, thinking that he looked fat or too big or whatever you want to say. But he definitely wasn't, by the way, because actually restricting very much what he was eating, and actually pretty ill in class, feeling dizzy and faint and things like this, and just not able to jump, just did not have the energy. But because it was in the school environment, you know, there was pressure, everyone else, oh, well, so-and-so was only eating a lettuce leaf, so maybe that's what I should do. And you know what I mean? So it was that situation. But actually, this, despite his young years, he realized that this just wasn't working for him. He was going into a class and he couldn't jump. He was feeling dizzy and fat, you know, so it's the penny. He realized that something wasn't right. And so when the way I sort of helped him put some practical things in place was I asked him, you know, what's a male dancer that you aspire to be? He wanted to be a professional dancer. And I think I can say the name of the dancer, Stephen McRae from the Royal Ballet. And he said, gosh, I really want to be like him. I want to have that jump. I want to. And I said, yeah, let's have a look at a picture of him. Now, what does he look like? Does he look like you? Does he look really, really skinny? It's like, no, he doesn't. He looks muscular, slim, muscular, but strong, powerful. And that was his motivation. If that's what you want to achieve, and looking at, you know, this is how I am, there's no way I'm ever going to get to that if I continue like this. So it was, you know, so that was the motivation. So I think, again, it's all about setting the right motivation for a male dancer, and also that male dancers, I mean, any dancer needs to be strong, but I suppose also male dancers particularly, because they are, when you go to see a performance, male dancers are expected to be the ones with massive elevation, amazing turns, and of course, pas de deux, right? Whether it's, you know, a ballet or contemporary, right? The men have to do some lifting. So they literally need to be strong. And so if you're weak and feeble, it's actually not only dangerous for you, because you're going to fall over on stage, but actually it's really, really dangerous for your partner. So it's it's just not going to work out. So that's my example of a young male dancer realizing that in order to be a successful professional male dancer, you have to be strong. So I think that's a good thing to lead on to your example, yeah, Steph, right, of a male dancer who is a professional dancer.
Yeah, absolutely. And he realized, so he kind of was healthy always, but then he realized at some point in his career, like he was no longer being cast for the more significant roles or those, you know, he was aspiring to dance. And at some point he was being told, like, you know, like, you don't look like you can lift someone safely. Just as Nikki mentioned, so the company was actually worried, kind of there could be some sort of accident. And unfortunately, he was left alone with his try and get stronger. So they don't have like Royal Ballet or a healthcare suite where their strength and conditioning coaches or so. So he was a little bit on a journey of his own, and then ended up doing one of my online courses. And then later I was seeing him one-on-one. And actually the problem, we can solve it, that he was looking just not strong enough for a male dancer, was due to him being vegan vegetarian, which is not to say that you can't be vegan or vegetarian as a dancer, but he didn't know really what does actually anabolic response to protein mean, and why can it differ between eating animal products and eating more plant-based products, and why do I maybe need more of those plant-based products in order to have the same anabolic response? And anabolic response means muscle repair and muscle adaptation, and I mean that's definitely what we want every single day as a dancer, I believe. And so it was a lot about the foods he was eating, the amount of foods he was eating, because on a plant-based diet, very often your stomach is quite full very early, but you haven't had enough energy actually. So it is being smart around how do you get enough energy, you know, in these mini time slots that you're having throughout the day, and how can you still support your muscles in repairing? How can you add those protein pulses during the day so that your body has a chance to recover better than before from multiple sessions per day? That's how we are on it at the moment. Luckily in his case, there was never the idea, like in Nikki's patient, that he was looking too fat, rather really the opposite. He was kind of, yeah, okay, I see what they are telling me, but I feel like I'm eating a lot, so I don't know. And it was really good out that he reached out. It was really good that he reached out at this point, because then you can really intervene with nutrition and help adapting to training better, and then like optimize body composition and physique for dance.
So these two male dancers are similar to the female dancers, whereas my one was more the intentional one. He was thinking that he was fat. He definitely wasn't, by the way, and thinking he should restrict and do this. Whereas Steph's older dancer was more the unintentional one. He thought that, and by the way, just to say, ethical things, you know, we're not talking about ethical choices, but like Steph says, for, you know, being a vegetarian and an athlete or a dancer, it is possible, but it does take more thought and more precision, because people don't realize that actually, have to be smart in your choices, like you said, Steph. And also be aware that these things can fill you up. So you feel, oh, I've eaten a lot, but actually it might not have all those requirements you need. So it's a case of So it's possible, but it does need a little bit more planning. So anyway, I just wanted to say that I think those two male dancers are the equivalent, like we were saying, of the intentional one or voluntary one, or whatever you want to call it, and the unintentional or the involuntary situation of low energy availability. In men, of course, in women, if you haven't got enough energy, your periods switch off. In men, it's not so clear cut in the sense, oh, there's a definite sign, but actually all the things that Steph described and I described, the person feels, just doesn't have energy, is feeling really tired, you know, making, you know, when I say mistakes, I mean, you know, feeling faint, not getting the steps right, and just has not got the strength. Those are the equivalent signs in a man that things aren't right with their hormones.
Yeah. I mean, the good thing really is they are a bit more resilient when it comes to low energy availability and the effects on the body. So as female dancers just simply react much earlier in the process. And also usually their recovery is a bit quicker than in females. So that is just the way it is. We've got more and more findings, I would say, Nikki, right? That confirm this.
Yeah, we did a study with male and the cyclists in Slovenia, actually. And yes, we found that the male, basically, because female hormones have amazing, delicate choreography, right? That's why. Whereas male dancers, it's more of an allegro, strong choreography with the hormone. So that's why I think, in semantic terms, that's why they're more, quote, resilient. But on the other hand, I suppose we could also look on that the other way, that... you know, it's not so obvious for the male, that signs are showing early on, and also that we should acknowledge that it is a thing, you know, low energy availability does occur in males. I think hopefully we've got over the thing that, oh, this only happens in women. It can occur in men, and we should be aware and you know, on the ball about that.
Absolutely. And we had it in our own study. There was, I think, around 34% of male dancers. Okay, we had a small group, but anyway, we had 33-34%.
Yes, exactly.
Being told to lose weight.
Yes, so. True. Yeah. So they're under the same pressures in some ways. So
or in some companies.
In some situations. So we have to be aware that it's men and women we're talking about. It's basically not a good thing for your health or your performance as a dancer. There we go.
Absolutely.
But there are solutions, and on a positive note, but there are solutions.
I mean, obviously we're all dreaming of when a artistic director or ballet master, ballet mistress tell the male dancer or any dancer, like, oh, you're not looking like, you know, you can do pas de deux anymore, or so that this is not the final sentence about that, because there needs to come something after that, right? Some sort of, how can we help you, or we think you should get this sorted, and here are some sources or some contact persons. But leaving them alone with this, I think that really exacerbates how many of them are seeking help very late in the process.
That's a good point. Yeah, well, I mean, a few points on that, I think, Steph, that we mentioned our questionnaire. So a starting point, we encourage companies, schools, and individual dancers. The paper that Steph and I published has got a questionnaire, which you fill in, you can score it yourself or whoever's going to score it. And then you get an idea, am I at risk? What's going on? So that's so you know, is potentially there a problem? And then in terms of, you know, seeking advice, of course, Steph and I personally, we run clinics, but also there's the website that I wrote for BASEM, British Association of Sports and Exercise Medicine, health4 performance.co.uk. I think that's okay to say that because it's non-profit, open access, educational, all that sort of thing. So if you're listening to this and thinking, well, actually, maybe I want to know some more about this, then that's the questionnaire and that's the open access website. But of course, our personal websites as well, Steph. They've got plenty of information, and actually you'll probably recognize quite a few of the the various blogs and illustrations you know, on the BASEM website as well. So, you know, we're all there is reliable information out there. So no one should feel that, oh, they don't know what to do and they have to rely on Instagram or something else right. or hearsay. Please look at these as starting points and on those as sources themselves. Like Steph was showing that paper, if you're really into this, there are, you know, you can go and look up the papers and everything, depending on what level you want to take this. So there are ways you can find out more information.
Yeah, definitely. You're both amazing. That's such a useful note to end on. My favourite moment was when Steph was able to pull up the research paper, which you won't see if you're listening, but managed to actually pull a physical research paper up next to her. Yeah, you're both great. This has made, for me especially, I think it's made the practical implications really obvious. So using the case studies, I think, is so helpful to realise that overtraining or just training in general and fuel is so important for performance, mm-hmm. health, for mental well-being. I just think it's all linked and they make it really help to make that really obvious. That's amazing. Thank you both so much for your time again. Just to say to listeners, please check out our episode in season 2 as well if you haven't done that already, because I think it gives a really good background of the theory of a lot of this work. Is there anything else either of you would like to add today?
I just want to say thank you very much, and it's always fun discussing with Steph. That's the main thing. Teamwork, right? And yeah, thanks, Jazzy, for arranging this. Basically, that's all I want to say.
Yeah, thanks for having us again. And yeah, I think it's as it is quite obvious, we are always having a blast.
Amazing. Thank you both so much. Chat soon.
Bye. Thank you.
Thanks. See you. Bye.
Thanks so much for listening. Tune in again next Monday. And in the meantime, follow at SideDance Podcast on Instagram. It would also be so appreciated if you have a moment, if you could please rate and review on Apple to help the podcast grow. Bye.